Cork sporting action at the weekend.
One goal to win the title. It's as simple as that.
Can you believe it?
Have you ever seen a try like that?
The Big Red Bench.
On Cork, good times.
Red FM.
Well, welcome along once more to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Good Times Red FM. Dan Casey here with you for the next hour, bringing you all of the sporting action from around the Rebel County and further afield. The Big Red Bench in association with Bord Gáis Energy, proud sponsors of the Senior All-Ireland Hurling Championships. Now let's get straight into things. During the week, I was invited to RT's Summer of Sport launch. I went there on behalf of Sports Show, but did manage to get some interviews while I was there. Here's me speaking to Rishi Sadlier and Stephen Kelly about England at the Euros, as well as the current Irish manager situation. Enjoy.
Do you have any sympathy for the English team at the moment? Where has it all gone wrong for them?
Sympathy? No. My God, I wouldn't have sympathy for people who are in a position like theirs. Where has it gone wrong? That's a big question. It has gone wrong. It's a real surprise. I think it's been the biggest surprise. I know people talk about like Georgia's results and other teams winning groups that were a surprise, but the big surprise for me, I said earlier as well, was just how this collection of players is playing together. Under a manager who, up until now, to give him credit, has always looked prepared, looked as if he was on top of his brief, never seemed flustered. You mightn't agree with how he played or his approach, but he always kind of gave the impression that he knew what he was doing. With this group at the moment, it looks like they showed up at the tournament trying to find out what kind of team they are, what kind of personnel they were going to pick and how they were going to play. And on a game-to-game basis, you know, all the players are coming out in between each training camp or in between each match telling the journalists, you know, we've been working on things and, you know, we've had meetings and, you know, we've had some home truths and it's going to be different. It hasn't been different. And they've had three games now and it hasn't been different. So the draw is really kind to England. That should be their biggest reason to be positive and full of optimism. But if you actually look at how they're playing, I don't think there's grounds for optimism at all.
Stephen, do you think Kane is the right man to be the number nine?
It's very hard to not play Harry Kane because his goal scoring record, but based on his performances the first two games, he was so off. I think he came to life in the tour game, and Palmer came on, he'd make a couple movements, put a cross in the box, looked better, but at times they look like they're screaming out for someone to stretch the fences to push them behind, and that would lead to Ollie Watkins or Ivan Toney. But it's very hard to drop a person like Kane because of his goal scoring quality. Like, he has got a goal in the tournament. Whether or not he can come good as it goes on, I have every faith in his ability because you've watched him for long enough to know he can do it. But at the moment, the way they're playing, I think you get players in around them that will, like the likes of Palmer, Saka in the time, Bellingham higher up the pitch, Foden in a 10 role, it might leave him to a position where he's higher up the pitch and influencing the game more. But they have options. And listen, I don't think Southgate's been afraid of making changes throughout the tournament. I think he's changed his front three at one point in the game. He's brought Palmer on. And so massive decisions for him to make now going into the next fixture, who he starts, who he drops, who he plays. But yeah, they have to start pulling out performances because they're it's fun for us to watch them implode slightly. It's kind of enjoyable.
I'm sure to say, when is Kane the right man?
I think one of the biggest things that they're going to have to confront together as a group is knowing that when they take to the pitch against Slovakia, or if they win that and live another game, every single time they take the pitch now, they know that they're 90 minutes away from things getting really difficult for them. If they were to lose and go out in a game where they played badly, another bad performance on the back of a few bad performances, the reaction's going to be like pretty explosive for them when they get home, and they're going to know that. They've listened to former players talk about that. They've been briefed on it, and they know exactly the way the world is now. And that talk can creep into your head during a game when you know, God, if things don't change, and how they deal with that, I think, is going to be a crucial factor in whether they're going to go far or not.
Is there a bit of damned if you do, damned if you don't, from a Southgate point of view? Because obviously with the abundance of players he has, it's like, oh, people say, you take off Saka, why did you take off Foden? There's so many good players there, people are just going to point out why you didn't bring on Watkins, etc.
Yeah, I think that comes with being an England manager. No matter what you do, there's going to be an enormous camp of people who've told you you've done the wrong thing. But he's kind of backed himself into a corner a little bit because he's come into the team with a set idea. Trent Alexander, Arnold in midfield, and that hasn't worked, so he's changed. And I think changing that has been a sign that he's prepared to make the correct decisions, but it's also a sign that the thing he's been working on for a long time in his head
was kind of a waste of time. That was something that wasn't going to work and it shouldn't have been tried. And likewise with the combination of the three players playing behind Harry Kane, that hasn't worked at all. There's been almost no signs of that working. But if he sticks with it, I think that's a failing. If he changes it, I think that's a clear sign that what he's been working on for so long, if he has been working on it for a long time, it's been a waste of really precious time, because they're now in knockout football, and that certain players are still untested, certain partnerships haven't been tried at this stage, I think is a huge black mark against his management. And I think overall he's been really good as a manager. He's been very good.
Irish manager wise, what is going on? I mean, is it just, can we just nearly accept it at this point that's going to be O'Shea?
Part of me is fearful of a set of circumstances which is going to be led to John O'Shea being announced as the manager, because it would be the most obvious sign of so many other signs that the people running football in this country are making it up as they're going along. Like, John O'Shea apparently didn't get an interview at the start of this process because he didn't have the credentials. He was given the job on an interim basis in March, and it was made public by Mark Canham that he wasn't a candidate and it was only an interim basis. They let him go. They brought him back only on an interim basis. They've let him go. If they turn around now, having spent the guts of a year looking for a manager, talking to managers, drawing up the credentials that this person should have, and then they turn it and give it and turn around and give it to the person that they've publicly said for so long isn't right for the job, then we're in this as a footballing country. Like, so many conversations are watching the Euros, you're like, what can we learn from Romania, what can we learn from Georgia? We need to get the right people in charge of Irish football, or we'll come nowhere near to getting to tournaments again.
You look at the academy structures of other countries with a similar population like Croatia, we're nowhere near that level.
We there needs to be financial investment.
The population, I always find interesting in Ireland, because I don't think any other countries compete with other sports the way we do on a home basis. We have two national sports in hurling and Gaelic that are exploded over the last 10-15 years. Look in Dublin alone, just from my experience, look at how successful the Dublin Gaelic team have been and how much that's influenced young players and where they're going to. So I think from a national point of view, we're unique in the sense that we have a small population, but we have structures in place for two other sports that we really compete with. So that's going to take away from the amount of players playing at rugby. Yes, there's an investment massively needed, and the infrastructure has to improve. The finance has to be put into it, and the FAI has been a shambolic for the last few years when it comes to that. But I think, you know, that when you try and compare like for like nations wise, I think it's very hard, because I think we're really unique in that sense, because we have amazing sports at different levels.
How do we go back qualifying for major tournaments? You see the Euros there now, we're being without hosting it obviously and getting in by default.
I think the selection of the right person in charge, I think, is key. And in truth, we don't know the specific reasons as to why there's been a delay. Is it lack of funds? Is it candidates looking for more money than we have? Is it they're coming up with a job spec that nobody really wants? Or are they just not meeting with people who fit the criteria? But that appointment has got to be done correctly. I don't think there's a silver bullet here, though. We can't go from where we are to back up to the levels of where we need to be to get to tournaments and get to knockout stages of the tournament based on the appointment of one person in charge of the senior men's team. Irish football is about way more than that role, and it's about way more than the performance of that team. But that appointment is the next obvious thing we've got to do, and hope to God at this stage we get someone that we all turn around and go with, okay, right, we can get behind this. We can see why this appointment was made, and there's reasons here to be optimistic.
Stephen, who do you want the next Irish manager to be, and who do you think it will be?
Who it wants to be? That's a tough question, because I'm looking at who can they actually get, and that's where my mind is bringing me, because I'm like, they've tried a lot of people that I know have not taken it. You're looking at Lee Carsley, who... That was my kind of pick, was someone that's coming through, who's highly thought of, whose coach is at a decent level, Irish ex-player, knows the infrastructure. I had dealings with him when I was on my coaching badges, and he just seemed like he was going to be a great fit for it. So he was the one I would have wanted to get the job initially. Now I'm looking at it, and it's just spread the net. Who's out there that can come in and really take the reins? But what they're talking about, who they're looking for, they said the criteria was in a manager that's got international experience, and a manager that's got club experience. That's hard to find. And, you know, are they holding out for Willy Sanyol? You know, the contract talks, all that information that's coming through. We're trying to figure out the dates, the day coincide with the dates the FAI set. I genuinely don't have an option to give you for who I want as the actual manager. But I just wanted to get someone in that's passionate about Irish football and that can come in and move us forward. Because I think when you look at the teams there, the silver lining for all of this is that you look at the Euros and think, are we worse off than all these teams when it comes to this players and what we have at our disposal? And you go, not really. You look at Georgia, you look at Georgia, how they got into that tournament. Yeah, it's something to look, but it's achievable. It is doable. We just have to be better in how we do it. And if you have a manager that's more practical and more, you know, organised in their setup and their players, the team is capable of getting to a major tournament because it's easier to get to them now.
If I told you during the Women's World Cup last summer that what's going to happen next is someone with Eileen Gleeson's CV is going to get the manager's job, you wouldn't have believed me. And if I told you that the role that Eileen had, the head of women's and girls football in this country, would be vacant for as long as it's been, you wouldn't believe me. And then if I told you that the men's senior job would be vacant for as long as it has been, two international windows would come and go without the appointment being made, four friendlies, the only four friendlies that the new manager has to prepare for the Nations League, they'll come and go without the manager being charged, you wouldn't believe me. But there are people in charge in the FAI who are overseeing those decisions. I understand your question, who should the manager be? That's the wrong question. The question is, why the hell are those people still in charge? What are they doing? And when the appointment is made, whose resignation is going to come with it? Because it's not good enough.
Yeah, plenty of strong opinion there from Richie, but a man with plenty of strong opinions himself is Ger McCarthy. Ger, you were at the Cork Camogie game against Galway this afternoon in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. This one was labelled as the big one. What did it live up to expectation?
It certainly did from Cork's point of view, Dan. They were absolutely excellent from start to finish and ran out convincing 2-16 to 1-7 winners. They were well ahead there late in the first half, but Niamh Mallin got in for 1-1 just before the break to reduce the deficit down to 4 points. But following that, Cork came out in the second half, something they've been talking about quite a lot this season. They needed to be effective in the third quarter, more effective than they have been. And within 19 seconds, Aoife Healy had set up Amy O'Connor for a terrific goal. And from there, they never looked back. From start to finish, they were just excellent, especially at the back. They really did limit Galway's chances in front of goal. Very, very physical game, Dan. Very, very tough game. A lot of hard tackles going in from both sides, something that Cork needed, but a deserving win. And more importantly than anything, that victory has now secured Ger Manley's side's All-Ireland semi-final position, so they don't have to play a quarter final. They're straight through to the semi-finals, and deservedly so.
Something I wanted to pick up to your from last weekend, all the fixtures were absolute drubbins at senior level. That's just talking at senior level. I think one at the intermediate level, I think Meath even beat Antrim 12-20 to just 1 point. Why is there so much gaps between the stronger and weaker teams in Camogie at the moment, and how do you go about resolving that at all?
Well, that's a pretty open-ended question, Dan. What I would say to you is, at the very top senior level, to be fair, it's been the same four, if not five, counties over the last decade. You've Cork, Tipperary, Kilkenny, Galway, and now Waterford have joined the party as well. It comes down to investment, Dan. It comes down to effort on the part of county boards and how much money they can spend on promoting Camogie. In Cork, they're very lucky. They've got a very supportive county board. Galway, Tip, Kilkenny, you know, benefit from a lot of the coaching and I suppose a lot of the heritage of Camogie that's there as well. You know, history does play a big part in it. And Waterford have certainly reaped the benefits of investing in underage Camogie over the last number of years. It didn't just happen overnight, and they got to an All-Ireland final last year. So the counties that keep getting to the business end of the All-Ireland Senior Championships, the counties that keep, you know, racking up big scores are the ones that keep investing. They keep putting a lot of money in it. There's a lot of, you look at that Cork team today, and of the, you know, the 30 players that were lined out, that substitute bench that Cork start or that Cork had today, all of those would walk on to inter-county teams all over the country. The strength in depth starts at underage level. As long as you're competitive at underage level, from under 16 right up through to minor, and you're challenging for All-Irelands, that seems to follow through when it comes to the senior side of things as well. The perceived weaker counties and the counties that are playing at intermediate level, there might be a case for, you know, allowing only one of those, like they do tend to do with the football, to come up to the senior ranks every year. But I think exposing intermediate players and counties, weaker counties or perceived weaker counties, to these senior teams as often as possible will only help to raise the standards. It's not going to do away with sometimes some lopsided scores, but today is a particularly lopsided score. But it's a lot of it is to do with this Cork team that have won an All-Ireland and want to keep winning All-Irelands and are determined to do so. They have the backing of a county board behind them. They have a huge panel, and they have, I suppose they have the bit between their teeth in terms of wanting to defend their trophy. But at the top end of Camogie, it's the same four or five counties and the others, and anyone that wants to join the party, and I include Waterford in that, you know, you have to invest heavily first in underage, take a few beatings along the way before you finally get to the level where you can be competitive. It's not easy, but then show me what GAA and ladies football, you know, top end sport isn't. Camogie is no different, but I think we are going to see. This was a surprise today, I suppose, the margin of victory, and Galway were disappointing in the second half, but, you know, they still have enough quality within their ranks to rouse themselves to the quarterfinal and possibly come back in the semi-finals and go again. But yeah, I would agree with you. There is a bit of a lopsidedness when it comes to the intermediate and senior side of Camogie. That's not going to change overnight. But the blueprint is there. I point people to Waterford and show what they've done over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years to get to the top table. If you invest properly at underage and you keep investing and get the right coaches and support from your county board, you can make it.
I mean, they were labelling this one as the big one to try sell tickets, etc. Was there a good crowd in there today, Ger?
Well, it's
that inhaled breath there said something to me.
Well, the fact that only one stand was open, and let's be honest about it, ladies football and Camogie in the county is not as well supported as the men's game. It just isn't. I do think there was a decent crowd in. I don't know the exact number, but by Camogie standards, it looks much smaller because it's in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, I suppose, is what I was trying to say then. But there was like anything in the Cork footballers, they have a hardcore supporters that go to all the matches. With Camogie, with ladies football, they've always struggled to attract huge numbers until they get to All-Ireland semi-finals and finals when big, big numbers do tend to support them. It was a small crowd today. It is too the Premier teams in the senior Camogie Championship, Cork and Galway, but there's a lot on this weekend. There's a lot of things happening at this time of the year, and it's when it comes to All-Ireland semi-final and final stage that you see the absolutely massive crowds that have been growing steadily over the last number of years. The Camogie Association have broken records at their finals over the last number of years, as have the ladies football. It will be some time before they get to the stage where they can, you know, fill half a stadium or even three quarters of a stadium when it comes to the early, or, you know, even the business end. This was a group fixture too, remember. A disappointing crowd, yes. But for the players and from their point of view, they want to play in these stadiums. They want to play on what was an absolutely fantastic Páirc Uí Chaoimh playing surface. So they're not complaining. But, you know, Camogie and ladies football, they have to keep fighting. They have to keep promoting, keep talking about their sports, and hopefully attract more support as the time goes on in the coming years.
Looking at the lay of the land, is Tipperary the biggest threat to this Cork side, do you think? Or who's the one who's sticking out for you? I mean, that's probably going all the way back to the league now at this point.
It's hard to say, Dan. I suppose yes is the quick answer. I think Tipper probably, you know, very, very anxious to get back in the tone for not reaching last year's All-Ireland final. They feel that they have some unfinished business, and they probably feel they have some unfinished business with Cork as well. It's very hard to rule out Kilkenny even at this late early. You know, I know they're going to have to go through a quarter final to get to that stage now. And same for Galway. Galway are much better than they showed today. So there's always that turnaround in the coming weeks. Having an extra game in a quarter final, a kind of a get right fixture before you get to the semi final, sometimes that suits teams. But yes, I suppose the quick answer would be Tipperary. But, you know, I mean, Waterford are always sticky. Galway, Kilkenny, you know, they just have, again, they have that Camogie heritage. And when it gets to a quarter final and it's a knockout and it's do or die, sometimes that brings the best out of teams, and certainly has done in the last number of years. But I would think that Cork would probably be, of the remaining counties that are left in it, most wary of Tipperary, simply because the way they've been going this year, their league form and how they've carried that into the championship, but also the fact that they didn't reach the All-Ireland final last year. And I know from speaking to some of the Tipperary, you know, set up around that time, you know, how anxious and how eager they are to atone for that. But long way to go, and there's a few twists and turns yet, but on paper certainly, and in recent form, Tipperary would certainly be the ones to look out for.
You sent in audio from Ger Manley, the Cork boss, of course. Haven't got a chance to listen to it yet. It was just sent in while we were on air. But what was his general residing thoughts after it, Ger?
Delighted, I think delighted on a number of aspects. Number one, just the overall full 60 minutes in the game, nearly went 65, 66 minutes in the end because of a lot of injuries. This was a really physical game, Dan, really physical. There's no love lost between these two teams, and that's being polite about it. A lot of, there was a couple of yellow cards, there was a couple of, certainly a lot of robust challenges from both sides. But from Ger Manley's point of view, what he has spoken about to us on the Big Red Bench a lot over the last couple of weeks is getting that full 60 minute performance, because that's what you need when you get to an All-Ireland final. You can't, you know, go to sleep for 10, 15 minutes or it's lost. And today, like, they were winning well. It was 1-9 to 4 points coming towards halftime. Cork were firmly in control, and then they slipped up and Galway got in for 1-1 right just before the halftime whistle, and that turned it, that only made it a 4-point gap at the break. But at the start of the second half, Cork just absolutely came out all guns blazing. Within 19 seconds, Aoife Healy had set up Amy O'Connor for a terrific goal, and they just went from there right to the end. Didn't take their foot off the gas at all. The other thing Germani was very happy with was his contribution from the bench. You know, it's a very, very strong bench when you look at it. Like, Sahely Ryan, around from Cork's Red FM, Sahely Ryan came on and got a fine point. But you also have, you know, in that panel, the depth, you can see it now. Ciara O'Sullivan is there, Clodagh Finn, Orla Mullins, who didn't even come on today, the likes of Emma Murphy, Aoife O'Neill, and then, you know, Grainne Cathalan, Niamh O'Callaghan. All these names are like that are desperate to get on and make their point. Saoirse McCartan as well, who came on. Like, when you consider Libby Coppinger and Maeve Cathalan, which would be two names immediately on the team sheet, are out injured at the moment. The fight for places, and the fight for places on the 13, and not to mind the 15, starting 15, is driving this Cork team forward. He was very, very happy with his bench. He was very, very happy with the work rate, with the hooking and blocking and holding Galway to 1-7, Dan. This is Galway, you know, at senior camogie level, is a really, really fantastic return. The scores were there at the other end as well. Nice spread of scores. I think it was 8-9 Cork scores in the end. Excellent performances. Mentioned Aoife Healy and Ashley Thompson in midfield, that driving force in midfield. But I keep going back to this particular line because they keep cropping up year or match after match this year, and it's the half-back line. Having Laura Tracy and Laura Hayes back, you know, from long-term injury, and Hannah Looney, the three of those players, you know, the two killer players, Tracy and Looney, and St. Catherine's player Laura Hayes, they just cleaned up today at half-back again, and they drove Cork forward in the second half, and the Cork forwards responded in kind. Overall, he's just delighted. He, you know, from a manager's point of view, he's mentioned the fact that they have a bit of a gap, possibly about a month now, potentially 3 weeks to a month before they play their semi-final. He probably would like that to be shorter, but it gives time for other players who are injured to heal. We'll probably see Maeve Cathalan come back into the reckoning, hopefully, for that All-Ireland semi-final. It gives other players a chance to put up their hand now and force their way onto the starting lineup. And there's just a couple of question marks over starting positions. I certainly couldn't name that Cork starting 15 for the All-Ireland semi-final just yet. There's so much talent and so much depth to this Cork panel. But I think the fact that he got the 60-minute performance he was looking for, he got the defensive performance he was definitely looking for, and he got standout performances on each of the lines all the way through, and 2-16 in a crucial game like this, and to come out of the group phase having not won the National League, Dan, even though he didn't say it, I think he's really, really pleased with the way this team has responded. They didn't win the National League. He wanted to win the National League. Winning all your group fixtures, I know there are some easier games than others, but you still have to go out and win them. Mm-hmm. And doing it in the manner that Cork have done it really does set them up as one of the favourites now for this All-Ireland Championship.
There's no fear with that 3 or 4 week layoff there. I was going to say take their eye off the ball. That's probably not the right phrase, but gain a bit of rustiness. You don't see that's going to be an issue with the squad.
You would hope not. I do take the point, right? Like, when it's 3 to 4 weeks, you know, it's that extra week or two that you, if you had a game in 2 weeks' time, you'd be straight back into training and, you know, the focus would be there. But this team, as he said himself, the Cork senior manager, Ger Manley, it's so driven. It's so self-driven. They set their standards. You know, they can take games by the scruff of the neck. If somebody's not performing, you'll hear the Cork players telling their teammates that they're not doing what they should be. I think they're so focused and so driven coming into this All-Ireland Championship now that even that extra bit of time, I think, will only sharpen them. And I've seen how there's been an incremental improvement since the end of the National League and the start of the All-Ireland Championship. And it's come game by game. But what it's also come by, and you hear it from some of the comments from some of the players that we've spoken to today, Katrina Mackey, Laura Tracy, Saoirse McCarthy, they're all saying the same thing, Hannah Looney as well. The younger players are driving the older players and are pushing for places. So you've got to be on it. Hannah Looney said at training sessions, she's never known a Cork panel like it, and she's been through a few ladies football and Cork camogie panels to know she's never known a panel like this to push themselves and to every training session, it's like you're training for a final. And I think that's the killer line coming out of this particular game, that this Cork team will not sit in their laurels. They will not rest easy just because they've reached the semi-final. They want to win this. They want the cup back. They want the All-Ireland trophy back. They want to bring it back to Leaside. And they're certainly on the right way, on the right path to do that. And I think another thing, Dan, which is very interesting, I think the dual players now, obviously Libby Coppinger is out injured at the moment, but Aoife Healy and Hannah Looney, like, they're playing every second weekend now between the hurling, or sorry, between the ladies football and the Camogie. Their levels haven't dropped a bit. If anything, they've gotten better, and they're as fit as I've seen either of those players. And Aoife Healy, she had a really, really good game in midfield today. Hannah Looney was excellent to have back. You know, this Cork Camogie team is in a really good place. They're where they want to be. They now know exactly what they need to do between here and the All-Ireland semi-final. They'll know in a week's time who they'll be playing. And I think all signs at the moment are pointing to another positive end to the season. Will they win the All-Ireland? Will they actually go and you know, retain the trophy? I don't know just yet, because there's still some dangerous teams left in it. But they couldn't be in a better position right now, and a more driven team. It's rare I've seen as driven a team and a panel as this Cork Senior Camogie team.
John McCarthy, we'll hear from your audio a little later on, but thanks so much. We went live anyway. It didn't go too bad, I don't think. I didn't curse anyway. That was the main thing I was looking out for.
Me too. Me neither, that. No bother, boy. No bother.
Thanks, sir. Talk to you.
Talk to you, buddy. Bye-bye.
Great stuff from Ger there, as always, of course. Now, during the week, we had the incredibly sad passing of Micheál Ómarhertig. Here's a clip of the legendary GA figure himself talking about his beloved Kerry in a past interview with Off the Ball.
Yeah, well, Kerry is it's a strange place. It's a unique place. Now, whether it's true or not, you know, they have great confidence in themselves. And that confidence is a great thing. Hope is a great thing. Kerry always had those two features. It is said when Noah was going out in the ark and passing around, because water everywhere, and he came to Kerry, and there was this big jutting up in beyond all the water, and lots of people collected there on the mountains of Kerry. Sliabh Lucre, they passed by, and then they were on the top, the Coran Pool, a big gang of people there. And Noah was passing in the ark, and he stopped in the hail and asked them, would they come on board? It must be the captain that spoke. He said, it's only a shower, we're okay here. they are different in their ways of thinking. It's no harm to be different, to be thinking differently. And I think that this is a great idea. I don't know who came up with it, having this special place. Top of Coran Tuil mightn't be a bad place to do carvings and all that, but it's an idea that should be pursued. But Kerry is a different place, you know. How many people have gone to Kerry to find out to go to Sliabh Lucre? But nobody ever found Sliabh Lucre. It does exist. I believe it exists, but I never saw it. It is there. It's maybe a state of mind. And I think one thing, neatly put one time by Brian McMahon, when he was talking about Kerry, he said, you cannot beat the kingdom Swede for horse or hound or man. The men would be the people that played football. The women would be involved in it now. Horses, there was a great show jumping horse came from Listowel one time. He was the talk of the country for horse or hound or man. The Hound would be the famous Spanish battleship. No doubt had ever won the Derby on two occasions. He did it three in a row. And I always say the dog was elected to Dáil Éireann and the owner took his place. That's the way with it. And I saw him run. First time he ran in Harold's Cross in Dublin, Spanish battleship owned by Chubb Connor from Killorglan. You know, he was a great character as well. But that dog went on to win three derbies. So Brian McMahon put it well, you cannot beat the kingdom Swede for horse or hound or man. And the story of the kingdom, there's a lot more years in it yet.
Brilliant stuff there. What an absolutely incredible, incredible broadcaster. The ref's whistle has gone for halftime here on the Big Red Bench. Come back to us in the second half. We'll have plenty of hurling chat with Ursula Jacob, as well as reaction from the Cork City Camp after their win over Bray Wanderers last night. Do not go anywhere.
The Big Red Bench
with Bord Gáis Energy, proud sponsors of the GAA Hurling All-Ireland Senior Championship.
Cork's Good Times.
Back to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Good Times Red FM. Dan Casey here with you for the next half hour. The Big Red Bench in association with Bord Gáis Energy, proud sponsors of the Senior All-Ireland Hurling Championship. Now, during the week, I caught up with the Sunday Game pundit Ursula Jacobs to chat all things hurling, including, of course, Cork's clash versus Limerick in Croker in 2 weeks' time. An absolute huge one. Enjoy.
Ursula, can you have a quick words about Micheál, first of all? Is there any great story you have maybe from down the years with him?
Yeah, well, one of the standout memories for me is he presented medals at our club. I think it was back in 1999, so what, that's 25 years ago. And I was only a young girl back then, and I just remember the time that he gave everyone, the pictures. He was so patient. He made everyone feel special in the room, but yet he was the star, and everyone wanted to just be around him. And I just found him always so infectious and so genuine, and like, what an icon and a legend. And I think one of the last meetings I had with him was at actually one of the Hurling for Cancer charity games, and I remember I met him before the game and I was actually playing in the game. I remember he picked up my hurl, and I have a picture with him holding the hurl, and you know, he kind of, oh, this is a nice hurl, and you know, whatever, but he was still able to have the little bit of crack and the bit of humour with you, and making sure that, I think I was marking TJ Ryan or someone that night from Limerick, and he was like, make sure now you get stuck in and try to get a few scores. And you know, he was just a character, and as I said, just such a genuine GAA person, and he was the voice of GAA really. And I just remember when we were kids, like, we used to turn down the volume on the Sunday game. It was no offence to anyone on the Sunday game, and listen to him on the radio as we watched the matches on the telly. And Mam and Dad used to do that for years, because sure, he was able to transport you into the game and his way of words and everything. And we just used to love it. Like, you'd be sitting off in the living room watching the matches, but listening to him on the radio describe what was going on. So, like, just what an incredible man, and the legacy he's left, and he's going to be a huge loss. But the one thing I found in the last couple of days since his passing is all the brilliant stories, and you know, no one has a bad word to say about him, and they're not just saying it because he has passed. It's, they genuinely loved him, and he was loved, and he's going to be sorely missed, and you know, a huge part of everyone growing up, and you know, the GAA really.
Absolutely. One thing I want to pick up with you from the weekend, there were six senior fixtures in the Camogie, and they were all absolute drubbins.
Yeah. Is there,
and I think even and that was just at that senior level. I mean, I think Meath beat Antrim 12-20s at one point. Why is there such a gap there, and how do you go about bridging it between the stronger and the weaker teams?
Yeah, I'm being honest, I noticed that from the results myself, and it is a bit of a worry that, yes, the top four or five teams, the Kilkenny, Corks, Waterford, Galway's, Tips, they kind of seem to be a little bit of a higher level, and it is a worry because you don't want the likes of the Wexfords or the Dublins or Limericks or Derrys or whoever slipping behind, because you're trying to raise the standard of all the teams. It's not the Corks or the Galway's fault that they're trashing teams, but it doesn't do much for Camogie if there's those kind of drubbins, especially when we're trying to push for maybe double headers with hurling. That's not going to be attractive to anyone if games are going to be so one-sided. So I suppose it brings it right back to the counties themselves, and obviously they need the supports and maybe further financial support as well, coaches, player development, because I'd hate to see that gap widens, because for so long in the last kind of 10 years it was kind of Cork, Kilkenny and Galway, and now Waterford and Tip have kind of pushed up to that level, which is really, really positive. You know, Tip won the league final this year, Waterford reached the All-Ireland last year, and they're pushing on and they're driving up the standards. But we can't just have half the teams in the senior championship, and I know I'm only speaking about the senior championship here, but we can't have half the teams progressing and doing well. We can't let that gap widen really. And I suppose it's the same maybe down at intermediate and junior level. It's probably not a quick fix either, you know. I know myself, when we were successful within Wexford, you know, we won the three in a row, but like, we haven't been back in a senior All-Ireland since 2012, and that's hard to believe because I thought the success was going to go on forever, but it doesn't. A lot of hard work has to go into it, a huge amount of you know, organisation and supports within the county boards themselves. So it's maybe those counties that are struggling maybe need to see what the likes of a Waterford have done or a Tipperary have done. I know they've done a huge amount with like Camogie academies within their counties, and maybe that's something that other counties need to do to kind of raise the standard as well.
Being from Wexford, I have to ask you about Lee Chin. What an incredible player. I mean, he's out of the championship early now, so like he's probably still going to be in an all-star conversation, maybe he even gets it after being out this early, but you might find it hard to see past that. But just what an all-round player, one of the top hurlers in the country, no questions asked.
And unbelievable, and I might be biased saying it, but he's an incredible player. You know, he's a really incredible person off the pitch as well. People mightn't see that, but the time that he gives like young people within Wexford and right around the country. I even remember when they had the loss against Antrim in the second round of the championship. Utterly devastated, but he still was out on the pitch signing autographs, getting in pictures with young players, and I think that's a real sign of the character that he is. He has had another phenomenal season. You know, he's the leader of the team. He's struggled with injuries at times, but he still gets himself back and he minds himself so well. But he's a fantastic ambassador within Wexford and for the game as a whole, because he's so humble. Like, there's no ego there. He's there for the team. It's not all about Lee himself, even though he's one of the best players out there. But yeah, it's a pity, obviously, from a Wexford point of view, he's out with the championship. But some of his performances this year have been just out of this world, really.
Do you think Rossiter needs to build the team around him? Like, Lee's not going to be around forever, and I know you have young guys like Keane Byrne coming into the squad now, but to get all the mix of them together now, how do you go about building that?
Well, you need to get that mix. You can't just rely on Lee Chin, because it can't be the Lee Chin show, because when you come up against stronger opposition, the two or three players could man mark Lee, and then where are you at? So 100%, I think Key has done a really solid job this year with Wexford. He's tried to blend in some of the under 20 players that he was over the last couple of years when he was under 20 manager, and it's something that's going to take a bit of time. You know, you can't just make that step up straight away. Like Keane Byrne, this was his kind of first proper year with the senior team, and he had a decent year. He's an extremely talented forward, but you need to give him time as well. Sometimes we're so impatient, we expect that everyone needs to be brilliant straight away. Like, remember when TJ Reid came on the scene, he was a sub with Kilkenny and he had to take his time, and look at him now, he's still, you know, out there flying the flag. But I suppose Lee is coming towards more the end of his career. You know, he's not retiring or anything, but he's, you know, post the 30 years of age now, and he probably doesn't have 6-7 years left in him, but it's keeping himself fit and then getting that mix of kind of the leadership of Lee and Matthew O'Hanlon and these guys, and then bringing in the younger guys that have excelled at under 20 level, because that's what we need with Wexford going forward.
So maybe an over-reliance on the maybe three or four players there, because I was looking at the charts earlier. The top three scorers from play at this championship, Lee Chin, Rory O'Connor.
Conor McDonald.
That's it. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, they're the top three scorers from play in the championship, and they're out this early. Like,
I know, it just shows how the championship has gone. But to be fair, like, you know, Lee, as we said, has had an outstanding year again. Conor Mac, I think, was back to probably his best performances this year as well. And then Rory, like, an incredible threat and a brilliant forward. And he was probably playing a little bit further out the field this year, more in the half forward line. And he's what a talent. And like, he was obviously a huge loss when he got sent off last week in the quarter final. But look, there's still lots of hurling left in Rory as well. And we just need to keep those guys injury free, because younger guys playing around those lads who have the experience, that's what brings the level and the standard around you in training. Then Wexford can't afford to lose five or six of those players to then try to replace. But it's just, as I said, finding the balance, really, isn't it?
Looking forward to this weekend as a Cork fan. I'm worried after the last two performances, obviously, as it would be, because what is it about this team? There was kind of maybe an air at the Waterford game, I don't know how true it was or not, that we were going to show up and beat these. And then the Clare game was kind of a nice bridge between the Limerick game, where they upped the level, but then for the Limerick game, they obviously upped it again. Now there's been two fairly flat performances. How do you go about upping it to a 10 out of 10 or an 11 out of 10 performance it's going to take to beat this Limerick side?
Yeah, like, you take it, they had to score 3:28 to get past Limerick in the Munster Championship. So, you know, you're setting your standard very, very high. no doubt about it. We can all say that Cork definitely have the talent. They definitely have the hurlers, but it's getting that consistency, and that's the thing that's probably let them down the last few years. No doubt about it. If they perform the way they did against Offaly and Dublin in the last two games, they will not beat Limerick. And that's the challenge that Pat Ryan will set them as well. And it's picking the kind of the best 15. Does he take a chance in starting Shane Kingston or Robbie O'Flynn or these guys, or does he stick with the guys who have played most of the Munster championship? But it's going to be their biggest challenge. You know, to beat Limerick once is hard enough. To beat them twice in a championship is even more difficult. But like, they're there now. They're in the All-Ireland semi-final. Remember the last time they met in the All-Ireland semi-final, like, we went to extra time. Like, it was just an incredible game, and I expect something similar to that. I think there's going to be very, very little, but Limerick do bring their best performances usually to Croke Park, so that's the worry from a Cork point of view. Sorry about that.
It does feel like, it basically feels like a final in of itself. I mean, these two absolute massive counties, it's I think already sold out.
Yeah.
The Cork fans, our Cork fans as usual, of course. Yeah. We think we're going to win, obviously.
And you know what? That's not a bad thing either, isn't it? Like, you have to believe you're going to win, especially if you're coming into an All-Ireland semi-final facing Limerick, who are going for five in a row. You have to have that belief, because if you don't, you'll be brought back down to earth fairly lively by a team like Limerick, and they will punish you. And they'll have a point to prove as well, because they'll remember the scenes down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, the invasion of the fans, losing that game, and that'll be in the back of their mind as well. You know, but I think it's going to be a cracking game. As you said, the atmosphere alone, it's going to be a sellout, and I think there'll be very, very little. I just hope it's going to be a brilliant hurling game that we're not going to be reflecting on it afterwards with maybe a poor decision made, or, you know, a sending off or something like that. I hope it's just the two teams going all out, and may the best team win then.
The Patrick Corrigan, TJ Reid thing, both on 699 points now. It's absolutely incredible. They both kind of, well, I think Owen Cody I was speaking to, he said, oh, TJ doesn't talk about it, he doesn't think about it. Hockey came out in an interview and said, oh, he doesn't think about it. They're 100%. Both thinking about it. Would one of them just come out and say, yeah, I give a shit?
They probably won't say it until the other person retires, and I'd say they'll both be waiting to see who'll announce their retirement first. But to me, the two of them, like,
they could be playing till they're 50.
Like, well, look, at if they keep performing the way they are, why not? And I think the biggest message in all of this for me is people often go on about, you know, players are gone past their best at a certain age. We base too much on, like, a person's age. If they're still good enough, whether they're 25, 35 or whatever age, you know, they just proved the point that, like, class is permanent. How they're still bringing out the performances that they are, and the fact that, like, you couldn't write it that the two of them are going into the All-Ireland semi-final weekend on level scores. Like, so it'll be really interesting, like, if Kilkenny or Cork make the final, or if they don't, which one is going to be on top after next weekend.
From a Clare point of view, surely by basic statistics and maths at some point you have to get into the final to pass this Kilkenny side, or do you?
Well, look, at the last 2 years they've probably been the favourites as well, you know. They're the closest team to Limerick and whatever, but Kilkenny just don't seem to go away either, do they? And I think they like the fact that maybe the last couple of years people have tipped Clare to win the All-Ireland semi-final, and they've kind of, it's kind of been a gripe with them that they're kind of like, we're going to kind of show we're still here. And I think it's going to be a really interesting game. I think maybe the last couple of years Clare will be disappointed, obviously, with their performances. I think they've probably got their tactics wrong, their matchups. Obviously the key one maybe this year again is, like, Tony Kelly and his positioning. Is he going to be out around midfield to try pull Mikey Butler out after him? So that's going to be really, really interesting, because do you risk bringing out one of your best backs and man markers and cornerbacks in the game to go out around midfield and roam around after Tony Kelly? But you see the damage he'll do if he's given time and space. Like, he scored, what, 6 or 7 points against Wexford the last day because his movement, everything, caused confusion with Wexford. So Kilkenny will be definitely keeping an eye on that. But there's no guarantees in sport. Like, people think that third time lucky for Clare. Like, Kilkenny are not just going to sit back and say, I will give you this one. They'll be sure that they want to get back into another final as well, because it's been, what, is it 10 years, going on 10 years since Kilkenny have won in Ireland?
Nine.
So, like, for Kilkenny, that's not good enough. So they'll be wanting to be back into a final. But the big thing for me is Clare need to get maybe their setup and their tactics right. The last couple of years, they've been off.
Limerick to win it. Who are they facing in the final, do you think?
I think it's going to be three in a row for Limerick and Kilkenny in the final again. I just think Kilkenny bring their best performances at maybe Ireland. They're very hard to beat in All-Ireland semi-final stage. They've had the kind of 3 or 4 week gap. They seem to manage that really, really well. And I think Limerick, you know, they've had setbacks, they've had losses this year, they've had injuries, but they've kind of, it seems to kind of bring them on stronger. I do think they bring their best performances to Croke Park. No doubt about it, I think the two games are going to probably go down right down to the wire, but I still think it'll be a Limerick-Kilkenny final.
Brilliant stuff from Ursula there. Cork City won their fixture against Bray Wanderers 1-0 last night. Keeper Brad Wade there with the heroics at the end to give City the win. Our very own Rory O'Hagan caught up with City boss Tim Clancy after the match.
Tim, 3 points, job done. Happy with that?
3 points, I'm happy with you. Again, it's a performance that we can definitely improve on it. It's funny enough, we spoke all week about it's probably the best week's training we've had, how sharp they were looking in training, how good they were looking. So we're really looking forward to the game tonight, but it was one of them games that it just everything seemed a little bit sloppy for us. Passes were going astray. It just wasn't connecting, but again, Brad's had probably a busier evening than he's had all season. And he's pulled off some from really top saves, and he might eventually get into the team of the week.
How much of the first half performance is owned to, I suppose, just back from the post, just mid-season break?
I don't think that's it at all. I think Bray are obviously on the break as well. Everyone else has been, so I just think it was a little bit, I don't know, we were really looking forward to it. Pitch is perfect. It's a big game for us because of the run-ins. Important, 15 games left before tonight, now it's 14, and listen, obviously the first thing we wanted was to win. We kept a clean sheet and we won, and again, Brad's pulled off a few great saves to get us to 3 points.
Yeah, Jack already started on the bench tonight. Was that tactical, or was it down to fitness, or...?
No, his partner's due the baby today. Again, I couldn't plan with Jack for the whole week then if his partner had to get into labour and he had to go last minute, so we spoke about it and said that if everything was okay, he'd be available to be on the bench, and it's a fortune if he was. He came on at half time and I thought he made a massive impact on the game. I thought he got on the half turn, he looked after the ball for us and he was making things happen. Was at a little bit of a dead leg as well, so that obviously made sort of force that change, and unfortunately when Muzz going off, him being one of the players that picked up, we needed to make a second change in putting Conor Drinan on for his size, and Josh had to make way as well, so that was sort of a forced change that we had to make, and I thought Conor was excellent as well, and it was brilliant to see Little Cahill back on the pitch as well. We've missed him for 5 or 6 weeks, and again, you see him cutting inside and an unbelievable pass to Conor Drinan, who's just offside, and he showed little glimpses of his magic.
Evan took his goal very well.
Yeah, listen, again, it's something that we spoke about in regards to the ball goes down the right-hand side and Murph makes a great run, holds the ball up, comes out. It's laid back to Darragh Crowley, our right-back, probably 25 yards from their goal, and Greg makes a good angle inside and he gives it to Greg, and Greg Cross, and our left-back's the one that's at the back post to finish. So we want to commit players forward. We want to get as many players at the attacking end of the pitch as possible, and it's always pleasing when you see your right-back up involved in the right hand side of the box and your left back score on the other side.
And as you mentioned, Brad Wade, one of his saves in the second half, I was convinced it would have gone in. I imagine you were pretty much the same, I'd say, were you?
Yeah, I think it's from the header. Again, there's parts of that we can probably defend better than we look at, but it's a point blank header, and he moves his feet really well, Brad. He's quick around the goal, and you can see that when it's gone in, he's moved his feet well and he's dived across and made an unbelievable save on the, to the right hand side, and he had one or two others as well. He had a brilliant one in the first half, he flicked it over the bar, and he's the one that got us the 3 points tonight.
6 day turnaround now, does that make a difference, sir?
Yeah, we tweaked a week now. We do a 2 day lead in, so we'd normally probably be off earlier in the week. That's going to be kicked back nowadays, so it'll tweak it a little bit, but we haven't beaten Wexford this season. We've drawn 2 games against them, and it's certainly one that we're going to try and win. You look at the results tonight again, and Cove got a 2-2 draw against UCD. It's difficult places to go in the league, and obviously we've extended the lead at the minute. to 13 points, and we've got to try and now focus on Thursday and try and get another 3 points.
Thanks, Tim. Well done tonight.
Thank you.
Rory also caught up with Cork City legend Derek Collin.
All right, Cork City 1, Bray Wanderers 0 is how it's finished here at Turner's Cross. Derek Collin was alongside me tonight on co-commentary duties. Job done by Cork City, Derek. Professional performance in the end. Maybe not the most exciting match to watch, but 3 points, and that's all that matters when you want to get out of this division.
3 points, but you know what? Well, at least they were tested in the first half by Bray. They stepped forward, they pressed high, they tried to play a bit of football, they took some chances. But in the second half, we controlled the game well, and an introduction of Jack Doherty and Conor Drainan, and then you had Colin Sullivan coming on. Greg Bolger pulling the strings in the middle of the park, and Derek Crowley, fantastic as well. But also, you've got to give a lot of credit to Brad Wade for those two outstanding saves and keeping us in the game, you know.
Yeah, he certainly did. And that one, just from point blank range, it looked like, for all intents and purposes, I in commentary said that's the equaliser for Bray Wanderers. For him to pull that off, he saw it late, reflex save, considering he hadn't all that much to do in the game up to then, just shows you how good a goalkeeper he is.
Yeah, and it's not the first time he's done it for us, Roy. He's been doing it all season. He's been quiet largely in games, and he's had to step up and keep us in games throughout the season so far, and he'll need to keep doing that all year, because as you see, there was 2 great chances there now for Bray, because outside our goals, I think in the second half we created stuff, but in the first half we didn't create much. So having Brad Wade at the back is such a bonus, you know.
Let's talk about what Cork City did well. They took a great goal first off through Evan McLaughlin. It was the ball from Bolger, your man of the match, that made it, but a very tidy finish from McLaughlin.
Very tidy finish. The defender tried to stand him up, and McLaughlin was clever. He saw that his legs were open and he took that finish through the legs, you know. But it was the ball from Bolger was outstanding. He had tried it a couple of times earlier, and the player that he was passing it to was just slightly offside, but that time it worked. And it was a very good goal.
Yeah, Jack Doherty wasn't named to start tonight. I wonder, was it tactical or was it fitness related? We don't know. I'll ask Tim Clancy in a minute. But when he came on the second half, he changed things for Cork City. They were a lot more direct. They were a lot more attack minded, and he certainly got things going for City.
Yeah, he picks up lovely pockets, and he turns so well with the ball. He's kind of similar to Cahill, the way with that low centre of gravity and how he turns, you know. But I just feel with Jack, when he came on, there was from a Bray point of view, they had to sit back a bit more and watch. They were a bit wary of Jack's presence on the pitch and the spaces he does pick up. So bringing Jack on kind of changed things, really.
Cian Murphy worked his socks off tonight. That's the only way to describe it. He worked his socks off tonight, as he always does. Brought everyone into the game, put that back four under tremendous pressure all night, and it was a great performance.
Great performance from Cian. He didn't get the goal. He nearly did. He tried to lift the keeper at one stage, just dragged it a bit left of the post, but he was battling all day long with the centre halves, and he held the ball up so well, bringing players, as you said, bringing players into the game, and also chasing down every lost cause ball, you know. So Cian has been doing that all year, and he looks fitter and fitter as the season's gone on. And as I said before, a couple of games where he scores in a row, that could change things for Cian's goal scoring charts, you know.
Yeah, UCD were held by Cove Ramblers tonight, finished 2-2 down St. Comas Park. It means that City are 13 points clear. It's a question of when, not if, Cork City are confirmed to be back in the Premier Division. Like, it's imperative that Cork City get out of the First Division, obviously back in the Premier Division where they belong.
It's very hard for the fans, Rory. I suppose maybe the younger fans probably aren't as affected as the likes of you and me, but being down in the First Division, it's a slog to come. And fair play to the crowd coming in, week out. We're down in the First Division. They're getting 2,000 at the least at the games. Yeah. And fair play to them for coming all the time. The fair play to the players for putting the points in the bag every time. When it's not exciting at times, but you can only play who's put up in front of you. And if teams are playing in a low block, it's going to be hard to break them down. But this team, Tim Clancy has found a way to get these points in the back pocket. As you said, we're 13 points clear now, and hopefully it's a matter of when rather than if, you know.
Derek, a pleasure as always. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Roar. Appreciate it.
And believe it or not, before the show I was worried I wouldn't have enough content, but thanks to Joe McCarthy at the Camogie, I now have too much. So we won't get to hear from the Camogie players today after their win over Galway, but we will hear from boss Joe Manley. I'll fire over the player audio to Sarah McKenzie Foley as well, so she can play it out on tomorrow's show on the Big Red Bench at 6. But enjoy this one from Cork Camogie boss Joe Manley.
Joe Manley, first of all, congratulations. An important win. How impressed and how delighted are you with the full 60 plus minute performance?
Look, we were very good today, I thought. I've been saying it there the last couple of weeks, we're hitting form. I suppose it's very important for us, I suppose, to get straight through to the semi-final, especially with the dual players. It's very important for Hannah and Aoife. Saw them today, they played very well, and they're out again next week, and I think they could be out again in 2 weeks. So look, it gives them a break, and I suppose our aim is really, like, we're after, I suppose, 6 or 7 weeks now. So the aim was to win, and like we always have hard games against Galway, and I thought it was physical for a lot of it today, and I thought we just came out on top.
Yeah, it was physical for a lot of it today. I mean, how important is that, because you have that break to the semi-final, but getting that kind of physical test, you need that before going to Croke Park.
We need it. We have a month's break now, which is, I suppose, something we haven't been used to. Adele, I haven't been used to, so Liam, we'll just have to sit down and plan it, you know, because we'll have no games before. It's very hard to get games. So look, we have a couple of in-house games, fine, but it's nothing compared to what you've here. Like Galway still not gone away. They're a very good team, but I thought today we were very efficient up front. We took our chances. I thought defensively we were very solid again, I think. And look, I suppose we probably, if we converted more chances, there'd been a bigger score, but I thought the important thing is that we won.
You conceded 1-1 just before half time. You were in control, but the way you responded in that third quarter, really, really impressive.
They're a very focused group, you know. I suppose I've seen them the last years, and I was with Matthew, and they're very focused. The girls are very determined to get a good start in the second half, and like, there's a super goal, like Aoife Healy made the run in pass, like, but that's Amy O'Connor's playing over skin, and the finish was top class, you know. And I just thought this focus on them at half time when they came out, and you could see it, they were driven. And like, the important thing now is that we just get them focused back on the semi-final. Are there to be won? I don't care how good or bad we are, once we win it, and then hopefully get to the final.
Your score and the scoring margin will grab a lot of headlines, but I was really impressed today, the hooking, the blocking, and the way you got back every time Galway looked like they were going to go through, you got somebody in front of them.
Yeah, I thought Ashton Thompson there emphasises there near the end when she emphasised near the end. Remember, she got back, she ran 60 yards, yeah, and she hooked, won the ball, came out, and in order to get a score off it. And I think she drives on the players, the experienced players driving man. The younger players are getting better every time. You can see the pan hilly around, come on, got a point, Claude, like, and that's the thing, it's very hard to pick the team. And like, you can see the strength of our bench again that came on, and I suppose it's going to be a problem we'd have for the semi-final, and it's a good problem to have, but I suppose to be, you know, we'll try to get a few injuries back, get them focused, and get the squad strengthened again.
So is that the plan between now and the semi-final, just see who's fit? And like, the dual players obviously going to be busy, but other than that,
yeah, we'll mind the dual players. Hannah and Aoife, like, they have a game next Saturday, they're down here, Corpus one next Saturday, 6. If they win, I think they're out again 2 weeks after, the week before we play. So like, we balance it. Look, they're two very honest girls. I tell Aoife, Aoife Healy and Hannah, look, we're saying tonight they'll be there, they're saying tomorrow the footballers, they'll be there. I don't know what it is with the dual players, we are very lucky with the three girls we have, Libby as well. They're just so focused, and they never seem to play poorly, you know. It's just like, and you think they'd be tired and this and that. Nah, they're so focused, and it's great for us. Look, it's good for, I suppose, girls, like, they're elite players really, what we have, do you know what I mean? You can see the quality we have, and we've been saying it, like, all the year I felt, I suppose we started a bit slowly in the league in that, and I think we're getting better. It's just now the gap, I think the gap might help us, do you know what I mean? We can probably give them a break now for a couple of days and get back training probably during the week, and, you know, hit the training ground hard in for a week or two, and then settle back and see who we have after next Sunday.
And just finally, the overall performance, very positive, getting a lot of players on off the bench, making impact. Are you where you want to be at this time of year?
Oh, semi-final, I learned. Yeah, we are. Look, can we get better? I think we can. I think there's huge improvement in this Cork team. I think I'm always telling them they're 67% of their potential. The skill level of the Camogie players, look, nationwide, just come up, you see Galway did, Gary Dolan did, a few more, how strong they are, and you can see what we have there. Like, some of the skill level being shown today has been phenomenal, and the conditions weren't hectic. Now, there was a bit of a drizzle, there was a bit of swirling wind, but I think it just shows the quality that's coming into the Camogie game. And it's not saying it hasn't been there, it has been there, but I suppose there's more focus, we've strength conditioning, you know, we've everything now, and we've a brilliant coach, Tim Cronin, and I think the girls are buying into it.
Best of luck in our Ireland semi-final, looking forward to it.
Thanks, sir.
The ref's whistle has gone for full-time here on the Big Red Bench. Big thanks to all our contributors, especially Joe McCarthy coming in clutch as always. Dan Casey signing off. Marty Guilfoyle on the way next. Do not go anywhere. The Big Red Bench.